Blog Talk Radio.
I'm popular and popping dope. Breakfast at Papa Do's. Dodging all obstacles. Trapping at the stop and go. Boy, you know you lame if you still ride stop and go. Dissect the beat and then I turn into a particle. Pardon dough, I'm hardened dough. You should read the articles. I'm riding high and dodging hoes. You better hope I'm dodging yours. Marta hoe, dollar hoe. White looking Madonna hoe. Dough shake a bun, a Ferragamo, and I'm Prada hoe. College hoe, zone three. Niggas with a lot of gold. Snoop got the dough. I just love being by the stove. Here's some food for thought. A little food for your soul. I'm like a comma. I love being right next to O's. I had a long day.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another episode of Foul Territory, coming to you live from San Francisco, California, here on blogtalkradio.com. We're sponsored by backsportspage.com, signsapp.com. Once again, this is Foul Territory. I am your host, Ace Abiel, and I welcome you back once again. Thank you so much for joining us to this evening's episode. Archibald Spots, my longtime partner in crime, joins us a little bit later on in the show to talk some baseball. Baseball is the topic of the show today. As you can guess, the regular season kicks off in under a week. How excited are we for this? There's actually a game Sunday night. The Astros are playing the Rangers, I do believe. And we can smell it, and it's very exciting. My fantasy teams are almost completely set. Got one final draft coming up Saturday. Very excited for the season to kick off. So in light of that impending day of joy, talking about Sunday and the rest of next week, as the other teams get started, I'm going to give you my full slate of predictions across the landscape. You can hold me to these. You can mock me for these. You can congratulate me when they inevitably come true in October. But I'll be picking the division winners. I'll be picking the playoffs, the World Series winner. We'll even get into some awards, talking about MVP, Cy Young Rookie of the Year. Who knows? Maybe we'll even flirt with Manager of the Year or Exec of the Year. So we'll have a lot to cover there. In other news, obviously, the NCAA tournament is right in the midst of the action. The first week, which is, in many people's opinion, the most fun, I share that opinion, came and went. And not a ton of surprises through those first few games. Obviously, Florida Gulf Coast was the one that shocked everybody, that has captured the hearts of America, and they now find themselves in the Sweet 16. So a little bit later, we'll discuss those eight matchups that remain and maybe pick some of them, see which of them we like a lot. So it's a great time for sports, great time for baseball, great time for college basketball. But to be honest, an even better time for one of our more playful, fun segments on the show.
One, two, three, four. Bum.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and see it now.
Nice vibrato, bud.
Ooh, Adam Scott brings home his family in the car, and that means it's time for another edition of Tweet Child of Mine, bringing you the most humorous, the most current, and most important tweets from across the internet. And just today for this segment, Carson will be joining us a little later, so I've got a double dose of Tweet Child of Mine for all you Foul Territorians out there. The first, because the first is the best, second is the worst. I think that's backwards, because third is the one with the hairy chest, so first has to be the worst, so those two can rhyme. But what Well, what's really important here is that it's both first and a hairy chest, because I'm talking about Rob Delaney, going over to him for our first tweet of the week. Really enjoyed that Phil Spector movie. Wait, that was just a vine of a drunk old man knocking over a table of Nazi memorabilia. Mm-hmm. I'll let you marinate on that one for a minute. And follow it right up with one from Rembert Brown, writer over at Grantland.com and Paideia School alumnus. And Rembert has a tweet for us live from Madison Square Garden, where he's taking in the New York Knicks game. And here's Rembert's tweet. Walk is eating Twizzlers courtside. Shumpert has 13 points. Hashtag MSG. Rembert Brown sitting there, Walk a Flock of Flame, who also made an appearance on today's episode of the Walk is all over the sports. Bring in one of his songs here. Just kidding. Not torture you that. I just won't. It's not need to be that cruel. A Flock of Flame, through that tweet and the ensuing discussion, which has already gone on too long, he has gotten more than enough airtime from this particular show. Let's talk a little bit about the tourney before we get into baseball, because the next few days are going to be some wild ones. There's some great. I have to work tomorrow, and I'm almost all of tomorrow, but I think that I will be able to catch the George Friday game. So that's very exciting. And I'll give you a little bit of the matchups that we have coming up, starting in the Midwest region, where Louisville is facing Oregon. And a lot of people took this Louisville team to go all the way. I personally have them losing in the championship game. Oregon is definitely a team that's considered better than a 12 seed, but a lot of people didn't expect them to get this far even. I think beating Oklahoma State in the first round was impressive in and of itself, but to string 2 weeks together, at this point, every team should be looked on as a huge threat. Not at all. Because any team that's gone this far, it not only proves that they have talent, but they're all on a roll and feeling good. You've won 2 games in the NCAA tournament. The first one was euphoria. If you're a good team, you're expected to win. Maybe it's not euphoria, but the second game means you've really got something. And I think Louisville's the closest thing to a quote great team as we have in the tournament. And I didn't even think Oregon would be this far. So I definitely think Louisville's winning this game. But there's no reason to expect it to be a blowout. Oregon can score. They can hang with them. And that one's on Friday. The other one coming out of the Midwest region is the juggernaut matchup. Tom Izzo versus Coach K, number 3 seed versus number 2, Michigan State and Duke. I forgot to mention green versus blue, because that's a very relevant juxtaposition when it comes to this matchup. And I have Michigan State going all the way to the Elite Eight. I like them to win this game. Keith Appling, their very talented point guard, is a little banged up. Now, the first instinct is to assume that this will weaken Michigan State and give Duke an even better chance to win. However, as talented as Appling is, there are times when he takes the offense into his own hands to a detrimental degree. And while he can be the man who's pushing down the gas and driving the team forward, he can also do a little bit too much here sometimes. It's a Duke team that can score a ton. Obviously, Michigan State still needs some of his offensive production, but what they don't need is him to be too ball dominant. So maybe this injury makes them spread the ball around a little more. Gary Harris is an absolute freak, and he can fill it up from the two guard spot. So there's no reason that he shouldn't be getting as many shots as he can. I just like Michigan State's style. This Duke team is definitely talented, but they just don't. I'm not convinced by the makeup of the team. Tom Izzo is famously 1-6 against Duke, although that's only 1-1 in the tournament. But, most teams have a losing record against Duke. So what does that really say? I like Izzo to finally get over the hump. although he already got over it once. See, everyone's just making a big deal of the coaching matchup, but coaching is very important. Still, two of the best here, so it's hard to imagine Izzo or Coach K really being the edge in this game. Guard play is what it's going to come down to, and we've seen guards from both teams go on streaks where, you know, they can just carry the club. And Steph Curry is every bit his brother in college. It's amazing to watch. But I like to go through. The next matchup is the Wacko matchup, because we're going down to the wild, wild, wild west. Yeah, I used three wilds, wild cubed, because it deserves it. And Gonzaga went down to Utah State. No, I didn't. I thought they would go down around later, but not everybody was convinced by Gonzaga's incredible regular season. Ohio State still alive, but the top of that bracket is wild because LaSalle is in the Sweet 16. And if not for Florida Gulf Coast, LaSalle would be America's darling, but they kind of have to play second fiddle to that even more amazing story out of Florida. So we got Wichita State and LaSalle in the Sweet 16. And I'm not going to break this game down too much because I'll be honest, I don't know that much about these two teams other than the game or so that I've seen from both of them in the tournament. But it's just amazing that both of these clubs have a very legitimate shot to get to the final eight schools in the tournament, and really a good chance to make the Final Four. Why not? So that's a really exciting one to watch. That'll be tomorrow, so keep an eye on that. And then rounding out the West is Arizona and Ohio State. I don't believe in Ohio State. I'm just going to put it like that. Aaron Kraft's defense is such a huge asset for any tournament team, but I'm just not convinced by them. In that last game, I really thought Iowa State, was going to beat them. They came about as close as they could. Had to be a desperation three from a 30% three-point shooter in Kraft. I'm not buying the run going any longer. I like Arizona to win that game. I like Arizona in the Final Four. Let's slide across the compass rows from west to east. And we're looking in the top of that region where number one seed Indiana is still alive. They escaped Temple with a 6-point victory. They're in the Sweet 16. And they got to face Syracuse, a Syracuse team that kind of hobbled down the stretch, didn't come into the tournament with a ton of promise. Really just kind of a strange team this year. But that defense can be exploited by Indiana, because the defense, as we know, is what usually wins some games in the tournament. And they have firepower on the offensive side. Michael Carter, the point guard, is really what it all comes down to on the offensive side of the ball. And he goes through stretches. He's a streaky guy. And with a definite height advantage in this game, expect him to have the green light. And he should be able to light it up if he's having that kind of a day. Still, I don't see Syracuse overcoming Indiana. I think it's too much. People have given Tom Crean some hell for his coaching. I think he's done decently in this tournament. Look for Indiana to move on. The other game in the East is a doozy. I'm talking about Marquette versus Miami. Miami just finding out that they will be without Reggie Jackson, their center. Hurts their chances a little bit. They played without him this year, had success, so they know how to do it. But you need all your reinforcements going against this athletic, energetic Marquette team. I like Miami to win it all. I have them winning the game. I didn't think Marquette would get this far. Very much impressed me so far. Barely escaping Davidson in the first round and then barely escaping Butler. Let's call them the mid-major killer. I still like Miami. Shane Larkin is too good. Their scoring is too pro. I think they will do enough to squeeze by Marquette. Put out their big man. Finishing up away down south in the south region is Kansas-Michigan is pretty much the blue chip matchup. maybe of this round, at least in a lot of people's eyes. There's some great matchups, but especially considering the fact that they are Midwestern foes. They're not in the same conference, but definitely a lot of games throughout the years. And I like Michigan to go through in this game. I think their offensive makeup is too dynamic for this Kansas team to stand up to. And I like Michigan to shoot their way through. I like them to get all the way to the Final Four. Finally, the darling, America's sweetheart, the Cinderella whose foot fits most elegantly into the shoe, is Florida Gulf Coast University. Everybody knows that. And they get to take on none other than the University of Florida, keeping it Southern in that rivalry, which isn't a rivalry, but will be if Florida Gulf Colts can pull off the impossible and somehow upset Florida. You hate to say it's a foregone conclusion, but it's going to take a special, special brand of Gulf Coast magic to overcome the Gator attack. I'm not bold enough to pick Florida Gulf Coast. I've got a reputation to think about. But I hope some of them bracket going all the way to the Elite Eight, or God forbid, to the Final Four. I hope someone does, because that person has the stones of a champion and should be congratulated, and no doubt will be, and perhaps financially compensated, though no one would ever bet on sports. We're all far too realistic. I've been keeping track. My Final Four is Louisville, Arizona, Michigan, Miami, which I told you about also on last week's episode, but just as a refresher. Still got all four of them alive. Who knows? Who knows? Could be looking at a 4-for-4 with Final Four teams. Don't say I told you so, but I told you so. So very excited to get these cracking. Next week will obviously be one step closer to the culmination of this fantastic tournament. I guess the only logical thing to do now is to turn to the Diamond. The Diamond is an exciting name. The Gridiron is also a good sort of abbreviation, sort of jargon for the field of play in a certain sport. But I like the Diamond. There's something positively gripping about that when someone says, now to the Diamond. No one says that, but I'm saying it now. Baseball is upon us. It's almost April. It's almost that wonderful, wonderful time of year. And as a Braves fan first, and as a baseball fan always, I'm so thrilled. Some positively just grin-worthy, good-feeling, and exciting news out of Braves camp, and that is that Evan Gattis has made the opening day roster. It's pretty amazing, if you ask me, what this guy has had to accomplish. For those of you who don't know his story, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. He was out of baseball for a number of years after having a scholarship to play in college. He pretty much dropped out of college. He struggled with substance abuse. He traveled all around the country working odd jobs and, you know, just getting by, making his way, and also pursuing some sort of some new agey philosophy type things, maybe in an effort to discover himself. But about a year ago or a couple years ago, he had that itch reminding him how much he loved baseball and how he wanted to get back into it. And physically, he is a true beast. He has been nicknamed Oso Blanco, or the White Bear in Spanish, for his play in the Caribbean over the winter and all the home runs he mashed down there. He stands at 6'4", weighing a solid 230 pounds, built rather like an ox mixed with a grizzly bear, although White Bear works as well. And he's been mashing so far in spring training. He has forced the Braves' hand to include him on the opening day roster. Really, any other decision would have been foolhardy at this juncture. It should be pointed out that part of the reason that he's actually going to make an appearance to start the season is that Brian McCann is still recovering from his off-season surgery. And he may not even get started in his rehab assignment until the middle of April. So he could miss up to a month. It's very reasonable. That's something the Braves obviously aren't thrilled about. They lost David Ross, who was, in my opinion, the best backup catcher in all of baseball the last few years. They pick up Gerald Laird, a capable guy, not the guy you want throwing out in your lineup, bit of a black hole in the lineup. He can tread water, but games in April are just as important as games in September for that overall record and for that division crown, more importantly. That's what the Braves are facing. They cannot, you know, be settled with thinking that the Nationals are somehow better than them and have earned their division crown simply through an accumulation of young talent. That's not how it works. The Braves have to believe that they can take that division crown, avoid the bullshit play-in round, and win games in the playoffs. Part of that is not behind the beginning of the year. Got to come out firing. Evan Gattis is going to be a big part of this. Gerald Laird, like I said, he shouldn't be batting every day. He really shouldn't. And Gattis, not a great catcher, not the best defensive catcher, maybe more suited to sort of a DH left fielder role. But he can hit so well that we'll put up with his catching to have his bat in the lineup a couple days a week. He'll make appearances when he's not catching. He'll come in at left, maybe. Who knows? Maybe coming at first base. I don't know what he can and can't do in that respect. But he's going to get his ABs. He's an exciting guy, and I'm happy he's on the team. It feels like he'd be a real glue guy in the clubhouse. He's a grown-ass man who's been through some shit. And these guys, they're not prima donnas, but they're well-paid young athletes who have succeeded at every level and haven't faced a whole lot of hardship. You know, if you want to call her seasons in Arizona hardship or just nothing, fine. He hasn't been through the same stuff that Evan Gattis has been. Maybe this is a guy that comes in kind of almost a team mascot in addition to being an important part of the bench. And who knows, maybe a guy who plays himself in the backup pitcher role when McCann comes back. You know, that could very well happen. So to have him, I think he rounds out a very talented bench. You got him and Chris Johnson, two guys with a lot of thump, and then Reed Johnson in the outfield. So just three really solid utility guys that make Freddie a lot easier and that give us the ability to rest some key pieces throughout the year, like Reed Johnson did last year as he let us spell Michael Bourne and Prado and Hayward from time to time. So we're all very excited about Evan Gattis. Julio Teheran, it appears, has firmed up his spot in the starting rotation. He's going to be the fifth starter going into the year. He's a sexy fantasy pick right now. Hey, I would go out and grab him. Even in a redraft league, even on key format, he is worth a late pick, a 15-round pick. I would definitely jump for that. He's had a good spring for what it's worth. He's 3-1 in six starts. He's got a 1.04 ERA. Nine walks in 26 innings is pretty darn good. And they tell you not to pay any attention to spring training stats. They tell you they don't make any difference at all, have no effect, no bearing on the season. And in essence, that's true. But there are a few indicators that some people agree you can look at from spring training that will tell you something a little more substantial about the player's potential that season. And for a starting pitcher, things are strikeouts and walks, or two of the three true outcomes in baseball, that being the strikeout, the walk, and the home run. And he's allowed two home runs, but only nine walks, like I said, 26 innings is a very good rate. That's three walks per nine. That's about what you could hope for. I mean, but on the flip side of that, a whopping 35 strikeouts in 26 innings. And that maybe is the most exciting, as that comes out to 12.1 per nine. So he's, in essence, throwing about 4-1 strikeout to walk in the spring. And like I said, I agree in large part that these stats mean nothing. I totally agree. Take them with a whole mountain of salt, not just a wee grain. But a 4-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, 35 strikeouts in 26 innings, and really passing the eye test, which he did for me when I watched a couple of his starts, it's got me excited. And he's using his two-seam fastball more. He's pitching to contact a little more, doing all those things that pitchers do to compensate as they come into the league, as they learn that it's not the same as striking guys out in double A, as you learn that you have to have a little more finesse. You have to have a little more moxie, a little more ability to bounce back, because major league hitters are damn good and you're going to get roughed up some days. And it seems like Teron has found consistency. He needs to be consistent with his delivery. That's something that plagued him last year. He needs to be on top of his mechanics, and that's his responsibility. That's also the coach's responsibility. His fellow pitchers, especially, Tim Hudson, who's obviously the veteran guy. Mahalam's a veteran too, but Huddy definitely leaders in the clubhouse. Teron is very, I would say the Braves are very optimistic about his chances to live up to some of the hype that he's been receiving for a couple of years. And at the ripe old age of 22, has got a spot in the rotation. It feels like he's been around for a while, but really he's only 22. And if you can come in and be a successful big league starter at 22, there's not many guys that do that. Almost every single pitcher that comes in and has a good 22-year-old season or a season that's good at that age, they're going to go and do special things. And Julio, my guy, so we're very happy to have him in the rotation. And hopefully he can stay up. But luckily, the Braves will have Beachy coming back, ideally sometime in the middle of the year, if Teron's not working out. But this is why we kept him. This is why Randall Delgado was part of the trade for Justin Upton and not Julio Teron. Because Randall Delgado has the ceiling of a 3 or 4 starter, whereas Julio Teron is the guy the Braves visualize leading their rotation going forward. So, talked about the Braves because I just have a moral obligation to do that. And I know lots of our listeners are Braves fans. And apparently, breaking news, Adam Wainwright has just agreed to a contract extension with the St. Louis Cardinals. People had seen this coming. It had not been a secret. It had been talked about as something that was on the horizon, the Cardinals trying to get this done. Wainwright, a talented guy, who came back from Tommy John surgery and responded very well. That's a tough thing to do. It seems very commonplace now, but still not a guarantee. Still not something you can say, Tommy John, he'll be back in a year and he'll be the same pitcher. No, I don't think you should still assume, or I don't think you should now assume that that's the case just because there's a better track record. Maybe certain teams are better at doing this. I know the Braves have had incredible success with it. The Cardinals seem like a very well-run, well-managed team, but they seem to think that Adam Wainwright is back and he's good, and he got a 5-year, $97.5 million extension, a little bit less than people were thinking. Matt Cain got $127, and Zach Greinke got a 6-year, $147. So fewer years, but not too far off on the annual value. Still a very lucrative contract for Adam Wainwright. It's going to be $20 million per year. That's the fattest paycheck, as fat a paycheck as you could hope for. So congrats to former Brave Adam Wainwright. And congrats to the Cardinals, because they got a very talented starter locked up for a number of years. But let's get to baseball on a larger scope. Because as we're on the eve of opening day, or the eve of the eve of the eve of opening day, or whatever, it just feels right to make bold, sweeping predictions as I lay my brush to the paper, the clean and unblemished palette that is the standings right now, because it's all a bunch of zeros. Anything could happen, as they say. This is when it's exciting, when every team still has a chance. Nobody's lost any games yet. Nobody's won any games yet. But I'm going to tell you who's going to be doing that winning and losing over the course of the entire season. I'm going to tell you right now what's going to happen. So, since I'm broadcasting from the West, I will start with the West in an inversion of the usual order of things. So we're going to start out West in the National League. And I thought about this. I've weighed my choices carefully. I've run the numbers. I've made sketches, built models, all that sort of thing. And I've come to the conclusion that the Los Angeles Dodgers have what it takes to win the National League West this year. But blasphemy, you say. They're just a collection of names. They're just a bunch of overpaid superstars who are past their prime, who can't get it done. They don't have the cohesion of that Giants club. They don't have the grit of the Diamondbacks. You know what? This year, talent is going to win out. And I don't want to disrespect this Giants team. 2 out of 3 years winning the World Series is truly remarkable and happens very rarely in this sport. However, I do not think that the Giants will be able to stand in the way of this Dodgers juggernaut. The way I see it, they can win 90 games falling out of bed. That should not be a problem for them. They don't even have to really hit their stride. I'm not even saying they have to. Everything has to go right and they'll win the division. I think they can have about half the shit go right, still have some stuff go wrong, and still win the division. That's how loaded I think they are. They have a lot of question marks. It's true. But the upside of those question marks is so high. When you talk about Hanley Ramirez, a guy who 3 years ago was one of the best players in all of baseball. He still was 29 years old, going to find himself in a stable environment for the first time in a long time. And last year, managed to put together 24 home runs, 92 RBIs, 21 steals. He only hit 257, but this is a guy who might be the fifth or the sixth hitter even in this lineup. I like Hanley really put it together down the stretch last year, hit for a better average once he was traded to the Dodgers, hit only 4 fewer home runs in 30 fewer games. So I like him to be back. He's going to be injured for a while, and that's a tough break that the Dodgers were dealt by the WBC. And I brought Hanley up because he's a guy who is going to really have to produce when he comes back, because it's going to be Luis Cruz, I believe, standing in for him, or Juan Uribe, some combination of the two. But Hanley is a big cog when he comes from injury. The guys who are really going to be asked to shoulder the load, though, are going to be Matt Kemp and Adrian Gonzalez. Andre Ethier is another guy. He kind of falls by the wayside. You almost don't think of him as much. But he's been an incredibly consistent producer. And, oh, I wonder who this could be. It looks like we have someone calling in. Is that Carson?
Better late than never, right?
What is up, my brethren? What's going on?
Not too much, man. It's another wintry day in early spring here in Atlanta. You know, doing all right. Weather's kind of cold, but listening into your conversation, your take on the Dodgers this year, definitely got the news about Hanley, which is tough for them. Interesting to see how they'll pick up that slack.
Yeah, you're a little crackly right now, but we'll ride it out and see if it doesn't get a little bit better. I think the Giants will challenge them. Don't get me wrong. I don't think they're going to run away with it. I just think there's too much talent collected. And even if Carl Crawford doesn't contribute at all this year, which is kind of a nightmare scenario, given that he's already missed almost 2 years, it feels like, they do have your boy, Cuban import. I'm going to butcher this. Yasiel Puig? I don't know how
there it is.
His last name. Puig? He's been tearing it up. they sent him down to Double A because he needs more seasoning. All well and good, but it's great to know that they have that guy there who maybe can step in and produce if Carl Crawford is just shitting the bed.
Yeah, that's true, Ace. And definitely with Carl Crawford's struggles and injury, like you mentioned before, definitely key to have someone behind him that can step in if need be. You know, with the Red Sox with a massive dumping at the end of the season, LA could really get you know, some good players out of it if it all works out in terms of his injuries and his ability to perform.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess it's worth pointing out that the one thing that could turn my whole prediction for this West on its head is somehow Tim Lincecum returns to 2 years ago. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think the velocity decrease is real, and that just limits his ceiling as a pitcher when you don't have that velocity, especially with that tiny frame. And I think the best he can be is sort of a 3 or 4 starter at this point. So I'm making my prediction with that in mind. If somehow he got back to Cy Young level Tim Lincecum form, all bets are off. But in my eyes right now, the Dodgers rotation is at least competitive with the Giants. It's not as deep necessarily, but it has that star power at the top with Kershaw and Greinke. And Kershaw beats the Giants every time he faces them. So I can't pick against the Dodgers this year. Although secretly it gives me sweet Schadenfreude pleasure out here in San Francisco picking for Blue. Surely someone will run me through with a sword or something. People always carry those out here. Well, Carson, do you want
to... I've heard of that.
It's pretty rough. You want to lead me through? I was starting with the West, and then I was going to go to the East, and then we'll go over the American League. Do you want to lead me through it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Generally?
Yeah. So now you're going back to the East, you said?
Yeah, we could do whatever order. I've only done the NL West. So
okay.
Wherever you want.
Well, okay. Well, let's take a look at, I guess, the newly revamped NL Central. Let's move it back towards the East.
Yeah, it is. They lost a Texas team, and I think it's important to point out that the first thing that comes to mind is that all these teams are losing a bunch of easy wins with the Astros leaving that division. And I alluded to this a couple weeks ago when I talked about the over/under win totals, but it becomes even more valuable to win that division because the wild card is less guaranteed because you have less easy wins. That said, I think Cincinnati has a chance to run away with it as they did last year. That I'm disappointed that they're not going to try out your boy Chapman in the rotation. I really am. I think it's too safe of a move. You know you're a good team. You've made the playoffs. You should expect to make the playoffs again, but you also know that you didn't make it past the other teams in the playoffs. And, you know, you could say, oh, well, there's bad luck against the Giants or whatever. But if there's a guy who has the potential to be like a top 20 starter in the league, which I think Chapman, that would be his ceiling. I don't see why he couldn't be that good. You got to give it a try, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I do understand that, Ace, and I think just sort of the struggles he had when he first came up, you know, might be the reason why they might be hesitant to throw him back in rotation. When he first came up, you know, they tried him out in rotation, you know, longer relief, and finally settled him down as a relief pitcher. I think that's where he sort of honed in his control, concentration, was able to throw strikes in that short amount of time. And I think, I think a lot of it is mental. He's had a streak there where he was just having a really hard time throwing strikes. And I think that, you know, having him in the closing role where his sort of objective, his role is limited, I think that helps him a lot with that. But who knows, you know, maybe, you know, later on in the season, you know, they might choose to throw him in the rotation. But I think, you know, he had a great year last year, racking up close to 40 saves, you know, a bunch of strikeouts, kept the ERA pretty low. But I think, you know, mentally it's sort of tough for him after he struggled, you know, so much early on.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you're in agreement with one of our listeners. Shout out to Andrew Messina, a.k.a. Machina, a.k.a. Swish. Got in touch with me and pointed out that it's a similar thing maybe to what the Yankees experienced with Joba Chamberlain, that the Reds want to avoid right now. And exactly what you're saying, Carson, in that you want to avoid toying with the guy's mentality, not letting him get comfortable in a certain role. And Chapman has publicly expressed that he wants to stay the closer. I think that's a big item too, because you know, some players will just say, oh, I'm good with whatever the team wants. And if I remember correctly, I think Joba wanted to start. He wanted that challenge. It's interesting that Chapman has come out and said, I want to be the closer. That's clearly where he feels comfortable. You know, I don't blame him, because if you're a starter and you're coming out trying to throw six innings, even five innings, you can't throw 102 miles an hour. You have to bring it down to the mid-90s or your arm's going to fall off. So, you know, maybe Chapman doesn't want to learn to adjust. Maybe he just wants to keep throwing 100 and dominate the ninth inning. And he's good at that. So, you know, it's true. It's like, why mess up a good thing? But I just think they have a good bullpen. It's not that hard to replace a closer. So in my eyes, you got to take the chance. But it's interesting the choice they made. I think it has something to do with Dusty Baker, who, you know, I don't have a ton against him. A lot of Giants fans, especially, and other people are very disenchanted with him as a manager. I just think he makes too many safe decisions, and this just is another safe decision where he's you know, not willing to put himself out there, you know. And Andrew Messina is now telling me that Chamberlain still insists he wants to start for the Yankees. Although honestly, at this point, I think they should try him out. Who knows? They could use the reinforcements. But sticking in the National League Central, Carson, I just don't think that St. Louis can keep up with Cincinnati. I actually like Milwaukee a lot. I think they might have a chance to make a run at one of the wild card spots this year. They added Kyle Loesch. No, he's not great. He's not as good as last year's stats suggest when he went 16-3 and had like a 2.8 ERA. He's not that at all, but he's solid and he gives them some stability. Giovanni Gallardo is a beast at the top of the rotation. They have some good young talent and their offense is incredible. Last year they had the most runs scored in the whole National League, more than St. Louis, more than Colorado, more than Atlanta. So I like Milwaukee to have a chance at that wild card spot. I think they might be as good as St. Louis this year. I'm going to say it.
Wow. And I mean, AC saying that would definitely be a resurgent year for Milwaukee. You know, they can claim that top spot, at least play at the same level as St. Louis, but such good success, you know, over the past couple of seasons. Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point. And, you know, the lineup definitely both sit and have some guys that can play. You know, I think it's a matter of production and getting it done.
No doubt. Well, shall we make our way to the East?
Let's go to the East. So this is going to be, ladies and gentlemen, what you've been waiting for. The NL East, Ace Mobile, what do you say about the division?
Just like last year at this time, I guess we weren't doing the show yet at this time last year, but I was still formulating my thoughts and making my predictions known. I was torn, because even last year I knew this Nats team was for real. And this year, unleashing a fully healthy Strasburg, Bryce Harper in his second year, and they added pieces. They very quietly added Dan Heron, who's a solid starter, has been very good for years at a time, and now they'd just be happy if he's healthy and solid. They added Rafael Soriano, one of the best closers in baseball over the last 5 years. That's what he's been. Look him up. He hasn't always been closing. He had to be setup man there for the Yankees, but he is that, and he has the track record in the ninth inning to prove it. And then locking up Adam LaRoche, which was a very savvy move, man. He's a consistent performer who's going to get you his 25, 28 dingers from first. He's going to play good defense. He strikes out a lot, but, you know, he's their 6-7 hitter. That lineup's very good. But I'm going to pick the Atlanta Braves to win the National League.
Let's go.
After all that buildup about the silly, silly Washington Nationals, they are going to finish in second by half a game and get that first wild card slot. Atlanta's doing it. I'm saying it right here. Let it be known, foul territory, March 27th. Stamp the date down in red in your date book. You wouldn't put it in a date book. Do it in your memoir. I don't care. The Braves have the rotation. It's weird. It's a strange rotation. It's not a standard rotation. It's like a lot of the talent is from the young guys. There's only one established guy. Paul Mahalan is decent, but he's not, you know, it's a strange makeup of a rotation. But especially with Beachy coming back for reinforcements in the second half, I think they will be good enough. And they're not as good as the Nationals. They're not. But I think they'll be good enough. And the depth will help them out. But it's the offense that I see exploding. I see it all coming together. You know what? It's how you win in baseball. It's two walks and a three-run home run. And that's what the Braves are going to be doing this year. They're going to be mashing taters, making tots, and they're going to be blasting bomb skis. And I think they'll lead the National League in home runs. I think that they're just going to score a ton of runs as an offense. And, you know, couple that with a dominant bullpen, I think that's a recipe for success. I see them eking it out over the Washington Nationals.
Wow. Wow, that's definitely, you know, a bold prediction. You know, you started off by saying that our rotation, you know, might not be on paper the best in the league. A lot of guys that have something to prove going into this year. But, you know, I agree with you, you know, on the point that, you know, we do have a deep rotation slash bullpen. It's, you know, not a bunch of, you know, name brand guys, but and I also agree with the fact that the Nats are going to be our biggest competition. When you look at, you know, obviously the big picture, Strasburg and Bryce Harper, you know, on the fringe, and these guys growing into themselves. We'll see what Strasburg looks like when he's not on an innings limit. And Bryce Harper getting a full season under his belt. You know, had a great run last year for the Rookie of the Year. So it's interesting to see those guys. I think they're going to be a juggernaut team. But like you said, Ace, hopefully we'll get young guys to step up in the rotation and make the plays we need to make on offense, playing small ball, getting it done to get on top of the division once again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just feel that way. And for those of you out there saying, well, okay, you sound like an idiot because you both just outlined 4,000 things that are good about the Nats and then picked against them. I'll mention some of the things that could easily go wrong. You know, there's no team is fail-proof, and the Nats, while Dan Heron's a great addition, he had arm trouble last year. That's always a big warning sign. A pitcher past 30 having arm trouble. Shit, things can go to shit very, very quickly, and they don't have a ton of depth behind that. You know, they have a very good starting five, but not the deepest rotation in the world, so that could happen. You know, Gio Gonzalez was in that scandal with the Miami Clinic. What if that resurfaces? A 25 suspension for him could be crippling. He's, you know, he had an incredible season last year. And then Ryan Zimmerman is a guy who has struggled mightily to stay healthy throughout his career. Never a guy I can pull the trigger on in fantasy, except this year when I kind of was forced to keep him on one of my teams, but that's a long story. Because of that injury history, and, you know, he's a big constant in that lineup. So what about him? Also, Ian Desmond had by far the best year of his career last year, slugged over 500 as a shortstop and hit close to 300. What if he returns to that Ian Desmond that's been his entire career, which is like a 240 hitter with no power? It's maybe not as scary of a lineup as people think.
Well, that's a great way to look at it, Aysen. You definitely bring up some interesting points about how the Nats, you know, may not regain their form. So we talked about the Nats and the Braves. Who do you feel will occupy that third place spot in the division?
I think the Phillies are still going to be pretty good. I think they're not drop liver. I have to give them their due. Those three starters it's still Lee, Hamels, and Halliday, and it's more in that order now because Halliday is having some of the same problems that we talked about with Lincecum, that we talked about with Heron, and the main one is velocity problems, and his fastball has only been clocked at about 87, 88 miles per hour this spring. He was never a guy who was only going to blow you away. He usually had a big fastball, but good enough pitcher's pitcher to pitch cleverly and use his breaking stuff, use his off-speed pitches, and just use his mix of pitches and locations to beat hitters rather than just blow them away with pure stuff. But it's hard for anybody to pitch at 87, 88 in the big leagues, and definitely some big adjustments for him. Cliff Lee and Hamels, though, are still some of the class of the NL. You know, I did a top 10 starting pitchers right now list earlier today that I put up on sidelinesapp.com. You should go check it out. And Cliff Lee made my top 10. Cole Hamels is right on the cusp, and that's a National and American League. So they still have a lot there. They're old guys, though. Big question mark. I don't expect much from Ryan Howard, but they didn't have any of him last year either, and they still were a 500 team. So I think, I mean, it's hard. They didn't do a lot of good, honestly. They got Michael Young and Delman Young, two of the stinkier, poopier, three cheese moves of the offseason. But I just still think there's enough there to finish ahead of the Mets, who, you know, they have some young pitching, and they locked up David Wright. Where does that get you? Fourth place.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like a pretty honest analysis of the division. Any surprises coming out? Do you think any teams that might, do better than projected? Any player you think might stand out? Seeing storylines in the NL East since we're, homers here. Any added input on division?
Yeah, one of the storylines to watch before I get to specific performances is Giancarlo Stanton. He's one of the best hitters in the league with his crazy power. You know, he's going to be leaving Miami. There's no way he's going to sign long-term there. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with him if they try and trade him this year, because the earlier you trade him, the more he's worth in prospects because you get more years of control. So keep an eye on that. Miami's going to be historically bad. So there's no real incentive to keep him around and make him miserable. But, I like Andrelton Simmons to really have a breakout year. And he's a guy who can pick it just incredibly at shortstop. And his one injury last year was a total freak injury. He broke his pinky on a slide into second. And yes, he plays an aggressive style, and we need to just stamp out his notion of sliding into first because no one should ever do that. But, I still love his athletic ability at short. He can be one of the best defenders in all baseball, I think, as he grows into his body a little bit and learns the position even more. And with the bat, he's going to be given a chance, it sounds like, to hit in the leadoff spot. And if he can produce, if he can just get on base, he doesn't walk a lot, but if he can make good contact, keep slapping line drives, he's going to score a shit ton of runs. He doesn't necessarily have to steal many bases. He's going to be scoring on a lot of home runs, I think, in the near future. So he's a guy who I like. Another guy I would say for the New York Mets to keep your eye on, and we may have already touched on him when we talked about the fantasy prospects for the division, but that's Zach Wheeler. And he's the guy the Mets acquired in a trade with the Giants, which brought Beltran to the Giants a couple years back. And Zach Wheeler was the Giants' top pitching prospect at the time. He is a very, very talented guy. And I think a lot of people are speculating that he will break the rotation this year, in which case, he might not have a ton of run support, but it'll be very interesting. Young kid from Smyrna, Georgia.
Graduated there it is.
East Paulding High School. And he was the sixth pick of the first round in 2009 as a high schooler. So, he has the history of a top starter. And I think the Mets were very excited that they were able to extract Wheeler from the Giants for just 2 months of Carlos Beltran. And so look out for Wheeler. Wheeler and Simmons would be my two to keep of an eagle eye on in the coming campaign.
Nice. Well, that just about wraps up the East. Is that not it?
Yeah, I think we took care of the East and also the whole National League in short order.
Well, that is a beautiful thing. Shall we do the American League? Is that for next week?
No, we got to do it now because the games start on Sunday.
Let's do it.
Make a little more brisk.
Let's reverse the order, and we'll start off in the prestige AL East, known as the powerhouse for some years now. Yankees, Sox, Jays, those three teams, how about MEASA, especially after this offseason, as sort of changing of the guard. You look at Boston, the new regime, as a skipper, after dumping those players off, like as I mentioned before, in the L.A. trade, you know, Yankees sort of changing up their stance towards free agency and spending, coupled with injuries, and Toronto Blue Jays just getting half of Miami's team going up north to Canada. How do you see this division shaping up?
You know, I've been thinking about this for a couple of days. I've been pumping numbers through the number machine, and it's come down to me picking between Tampa Bay and Toronto to win the division. And I've just settled on Tampa Bay. I just can't pick against them, and it's hard to do because Toronto on paper is so, so loaded. And they have the potential to have better rotation than Tampa, which that's been the difference the last few years. Tampa has had best rotation in the American League East for 3 years running. And I think the Blue Jays will challenge that, but I'm just not convinced yet. I've seen this Tampa Bay team play as a unit. I've seen Joe Maddon manage them. I've seen them make adjustments throughout the year, use players in creative ways, use statistical analysis to stay a step ahead of everyone. And the Blue Jays do that too. But I just haven't seen the cohesion of that Blue Jays team. As of right now, you know, it's not the Dodgers, but it's still kind of a collection. It's a lot of new players, some standbys. You know, is Jose Bautista, is he 50 home runs, or is he more like a 280 hitter with 30 home runs, which is still very good. But what is he? Assuming he stays healthy, that's a huge boon for them. I mean, Jose Reyes in that lineup, it's terrifying. It really is. And yet I am picking the Rays. I think it'll be a close finish. I think Baltimore won't be far behind, to be honest. They have a chance to compete for the wild card right there along with those two teams and some of the teams out west. So, I like it finishing Tampa Bay, Toronto, Baltimore, and then the two juggernauts battling it out for the cellar of the American League East.
That is crazy. You are here first. I would definitely be ESPN would have an absolute field day with that. You know, given the amount of time they devote to both of those clubs. But very interesting take, and I guess it's a new look to the AL East division. So let's head on down to the AL Central division that has some interesting teams, going through some changes. You know, Detroit has been a mainstay, I guess, for the last couple of years, you know, with the significance that they've had at the and they started pitching. Verlander has been dominant last year. Miggy having a record year. Do you see Detroit ASA repeating? You know, the success they had last year.
Yes, I think they got even better. You said Miggy had a good year. He won the Triple Crown, man. And let's, you know, Fielder. He's just all he is the guy who hits behind MVP every year. So. It's so good, and they got Victor Martinez coming back. He missed all of last year. He broke, like, his knee in the preseason, which was kind of the impetus to go get Fielder in the first place. And, I mean, mad respect to Miggy for moving across the diamond and playing third. It, you know, it wasn't pretty all the time, but I think the consensus was that he did a fine job. And, you know, infield defense is not going to be that team's forte with him and Johnny Peralta on the left side. It's just not. But that's they don't care. That's not who they are. They have a fast, speedy outfield led by Austin Jackson, who's turning into just a friggin' hell of a player. And making that trade with the Yankees look pretty good from the Tigers' standpoint. And, you know, they're not going to win with infield defense, but they're just going to mash on offense. They added Torii Hunter, who hit like 310 last year with the Angels. And that's a great clubhouse presence, a great veteran guy. And he's very good in the outfield, not a center fielder anymore, but in a corner. I mean, he's a great right fielder. Then you got Austin Jackson in center. You got a collection of other guys that they let go of Brandon Bosch, but they got some guys like Andy Dierks, Avisail Garcia, a couple other outfielders that they'll mix and match for that third spot. But they are so, so good. And Anibal Sanchez, too. People don't love him. I've always liked him a lot. I've always seen him pitch for the Marlins because Braves face the Marlins 18 times a year. And I think he's a very solid addition. They'll have him for a full year. Max Scherzer, you know, maybe he matures a little bit more, finds some more consistency. It's a hell of a team, and I would be remiss not to pick them to win this division and frankly, not to run away with it again. They only won by 3 games last year, so I guess I'll correct myself. They didn't exactly run away with it, but I do think they should this year. However, I think there's a little bit of a changing in the guard because I think Kansas City, I'm not going to say this is the year that they're good, but I think they have a healthy chance to finish second in the American League Central.
I was about to ask that question. Is there a scenario that you see Kansas City not finishing last?
Well, every scenario, just because the Twins are so, so bad too. But I do like Kansas City this year. You know, Cleveland added a lot. So maybe Cleveland is a sexy pick too for people that are looking for upset special in the Central. But Cleveland added pieces on offense. Kansas City had pieces in the pitching staff. And in my opinion, pitching is going to make the difference. And James Shields is a huge move. He is one of the true aces in the league, not one of the top 5 or 10 pitchers, but he goes out, gives you 8, maybe 9 innings almost every single time. He is a big game pitcher, big game James. And I think their rotation gets a hell of a lot better adding him. It's still not a great rotation. They still, are going to rely on some young guys. And if they're going to succeed, they're going to have some success at the back end from some young guys. But it's more veteran. It's Jeremy Guthrie, Irvin Santana, Wade Davis. Actually, I thought it was better than that. I'm not going to waver on this pick, but I thought it was a little bit better than that. It just underscores my other point. They'll need some young guys to step up and compete at the major league level and contribute. They traded Jake Odorizzi to the Rays, but some guys like Lamb maybe or Montgomery are going to have to step up. But their offense is loaded. They've got youth everywhere, and some of these guys haven't come into their own. Eric Hosmer had a horrible sophomore slump, but I think between him, Moustakas, and Alcides Escobar, Lorenzen Cain, at least 2 or 3 of those guys are going to be good to very good, and that'll be huge. Alex Gordon's always already established himself. Billy Butler is a very, very solid DH, one of the best full-time DHs, and Salvador Perez, man, he's a hell of a catcher. So they've got it on the offensive side. The question is, did they do enough to reinforce the pitching? To me, it looks like they did. Not enough to compete for the division crown, but enough to, like Carson said, stay out of the cellar and to perhaps give 500 a run. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, that sounds like a nice roundup in the Central, always entertaining with the storied franchises in that division. Ace, let's go ahead and move it on to the AL West. And just looking at these teams, Houston, not so much. They have, they run the risk of losing a lot of games this year. But towards the end of last year, Ace, this became a pretty dominant, division with the Angels, the A's, the Mariners, and the Rangers. Definitely some shakeup with Josh Hamilton making moves. to, you know, interdivision rival. Texas doing some things, different roster spots, has some young guys, you know, coming in to fill in spots that were previously held by veterans. What do you think about the AL West?
So, I've picked a lot of the Giants of Major League Baseball to fall. And, you know, I picked the Nats to go down. I picked, and, you know, I guess that maybe that was it. But I picked some of the mainstays of the AL East. But I don't think, my heart tells me to pick the A's. It really does. But my brain is telling me to pick the Angels. And I know I picked them last year. It was a year early, but I don't think that means I can't pick them again. And they're just too good. They're too good on the offensive side of the ball. I really question their pitching, which is why I want to take the A's, because Jared Weaver is solid, but he's another guy who's had drops in velocity, and he's managed to get it done. He prevents runs at an incredible rate for a fly ball pitcher without a ton of velocity, but how much longer can he get by? He's defeating all of the things the stats say should be happening. He keeps beating his projections, and sure, stats don't tell the whole story, and the mathematical models are, you know, you can throw them out the window half the time, but I don't believe in that rotation at all, because after him, then you have C.J. Wilson, who I don't know if he was ever a number two pitcher, had a couple sexy years there, then got paid. Last year was eh. I don't believe in him. And after that, it gets super ugly. We're talking about Tommy Hansen. I said this before, I'll say it again. The Braves let go of a starting pitcher. Beware. Be careful. It's Tommy Hansen. And Jason Vargas. Their best hope is that Joe Glenn eats Tommy Hansen. They both die. They don't have to pay them. Good Lord. This rotation's a mess. Vargas might be decent. Who knows? He kind of got by in a big Safeco Park as a fly ball pitcher. But I just don't love this rotation. But still, I'm picking them to win because they did add to the bullpen. That helps because it shortens the game. They added Sean Burnett to Ernesto Freire, Scott Downs, Kelvin Jepsen, some really talented relievers. Brian Madsen, of course, as well. And their offense is just too good. A lineup with Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and Josh Hamilton, they're going to have very few games where they're held to 0, 1, or 2 runs. Too much can happen with those guys. The supporting cast is very good as well. There's no real weak link. There's no holes in that lineup. And they're just too good. But I think the A's have a chance to challenge them, and I expect it to be close. I expect the A's to give them a run for their money. And, you know, don't think I've forgotten about the Rangers. I don't think they're that great this year. They were waning a little bit last year. They kind of jumped out to that huge start and then coughed up the division to the A's. I don't love their rotation. I like the A's rotation a lot, especially getting Brett Anderson back and healthy. That young A's team, they made some good additions. They're very Billy Bean moves. They're small moves. The small moves that bolster the team, though, they're adding Chris Young, who can play great center field defense. And while they have a surplus of outfielders, you know, maybe Yoenis Cespedes can go play DH if he needs a rest. You know, Coco Crisp could get a day off. Josh Reddick can get some time off. And then adding Jed Lowry was big because he was the only decent player left on the Astros. They scooped him up. And he's a very capable shortstop or second baseman. And they'll be able to mix and match the infield. I like the A's to finish ahead of the Rangers. So I'll say Angels, A's, Rangers, and Mariners in front of the Astros, of course. The Mariners probably will be decent this year, too, but there's just not enough wins to go around there.
Wow, Ace. So, I mean, I definitely like that comparison. And it looks like it's going to be a tough year for the Rangers. And good for the A's, you know, something going on in Oakland. That's where they struggled for so many years. And last year, really making a run towards the end of the season, you know, towards the playoffs. So that was the AL rundown. A lot of information coming your way. That's the way Ace sees it. And he's a guru of baseball and all things sports. So you definitely have to take a look at that.
Aw, you flatter me so much. But you're right.
I try. I'm speaking the truth. Cannot tell a lie.
Well, speaking of not telling lies, I'm going to tell some truth right now in that we are going to try to get some of the draft prospects on the show. Got something maybe in the works. I don't want to tell you guys anything for certain because nothing's for certain. Old Daniel Wilcox, friend of the show, about getting one of his guys on. We're hoping to get that. Getting really excited for the NFL draft. It's only a month away, and we'll have regular stuff to talk about in the Major League Baseball season starting next week. The games count. And, this is Foul Territory on Blog Talk Radio. We're sponsored by BackSportsPage.com. Go check that out. Great features and interviews across the world of sports, everything from MMA to pogo sticking. And also check out sideline.com. Really my favorite place to go on the internet and argue about sports, debate with my friends, and enter cool contests like the ones going on right now relating to March Madness, where you can pick which team you think will make it through all the way to the Final Four. And you can win all sorts of cool stuff like Amazon.com gift cards, copies of FIFA or Madden or whatever your game of choice is, and all sorts of cool stuff. So check out Sidelines. That's a fun place to visit. We're a fun place to visit, which is why you're visiting us. Thanks for hanging with us this evening. We'll be back, as always, next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Carson, you want to give the people any last words after I just exhausted my breath?
I mean, you got some great information tonight. Definitely put good use to it. Like I said, we'll be back at it next week with a full slate of information coming your way. Definitely an exciting time in sports. Foul Territorians, get ready for it.
Soulja Boy, so. Hey, I got the new dance for y'all called the Soulja Boy. You got a punch, then crank back three times from left to right.
Why me crank it, why me roll? Why me crank that Soulja Boy, that Superman, that hoe? Now why me you? Crank that Soulja Boy, 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 why me you? Soulja Boy, I been the hoe.